Hello and welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg. My guest today is Sylvester McNutt III. He is a good friend of mine and he is a vibe. This guy is a character. He loves to write about healing, relationships, mindset, energy. He shares positivity with the world and he likes to write words that encourage you to live the life you deserve. This dude has written 9 books. They include titles such as Lust for Life, Dear Soul, Love After Pain. I mean, he is in the personal development space. He's got a podcast called the Free Your Energy Podcast. He's got online courses about building your boundaries, people pleasing, how to stop overthinking. And in this conversation, we just jam for a while about energy and routines and rituals. And at the end, you get a little taste of what me and my buddies lovingly refer to as a Sly Slam, where Sly turns up the heat, channels a little transmission, gets the volume going, gets the pulse racing, and he gives you a little bit of a pep talk, a little empowered rant, if you will. So it's worth listening to the very end. I love this dude. He is a huge Instagram personality too. He has got like 645,000 followers on Instagram. So you can get into his space that way. I think you're going to dig this one. He's a great human. And without further ado, here is Sylvester McNutt III. All right. Sylvester McNutt, first question. I just saw you light something on your desk. Do you got incense? You got a candle? What's going on?
To be honest, it was the light. It was just the backlight. I just needed another light. It was kind of dark in here.
Yeah. Now you're not a candle.
Not a candle.
Your skin is looking, what's the word? Vibrant?
I'll take that, man. I'll take all the compliments I can get.
You look like you've freed some energy lately.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But welcome back to the podcast. It's been a minute since you stopped by. But for those listening that, for whatever reason, have no idea who Sylvester McNutt III is, how do you describe yourself? Like, who are you, man?
I guess the only way to really describe yourself would be like a present moment, you know, description. So at 12:09 on September 19th, you know, I feel amazing. Like, I feel great. This morning was a great morning for me. I got to do the things that I really like to do to start the day. I have this theory called Win Your Morning. I'm sure I'm not the only person that has this theory, and I'm sure there's other phrases that people use, but you know, for me, I just call it win your morning. Another phrase I use is protect your morning, depending on if you're like the warrior type and you're like, win your morning, yeah. Or like if you struggle with boundaries and people pleasing, then you need to protect your morning. You know, you just change the language to fit the personality or to fit the journal. But for me, it's like I got to win my morning. So, you know, I started the day off and made my bed. I do the same thing, man, every morning, just make my bed. And then I do my 2 H's, which is hydrate and hygiene. It's typically, you know, brush your teeth, wash your face, deodorant, you know, that type of thing, and some water. And then I go to the gym. That's like my main priority first thing in the morning, is to go to the gym and move my body. Now, usually, though, I'll eat after the gym. But I woke up and I was starving, man. Like, my stomach was screaming, like, give me some food before you go, you know, because I knew I wasn't going to get back till now. It's 12:30 my time. So I was like, OK, cool. So I made a breakfast I love, which was it was like some bison beef and 3 scrambled eggs. And I had a bulletproof coffee that I made homemade. It's like MCT oil and some butter and some cold brew, and like I blended it. And as I was driving in, it takes me like 20 minutes to get to the gym. It's interesting, like, what you expose yourself to before you do something. So at first I was listening to a podcast, but it was like boring, you know? So I was like, I don't want to listen to this like as I'm going into the gym. So then I put on like some ESPN and they were talking about the football games this weekend, but it was like a debate show. So the energy was like, they're like arguing about these football players. And the energy was just like good for me to like before the gym energy, like listen to some grown men argue about something trivial, you know? And then I got to the gym and I've been working out like very intuitively, very, very intuitively. My thing right now is just go every day and listen to your body. So I lifted real hard yesterday and I was doing box jumps yesterday. So I was doing a lot of like explosive stuff yesterday. So today was more like, it was more like recovery, you know? So I did like a lot of mobility, hip mobility, back mobility, mid back. I did a lot of stretching. I did a lot of core work and I got on the, I found a football. So I started throwing the football to myself, like reminiscing my old days, you know? And I still got it, you know, I still got the ability to catch the ball, you know, and, you know, just got back here. And then one thing that I'm into is fashion. Like I'm not like a fashion, icon or anything of the sorts, but I do like to, you know, make a good outfit. So this is a brand new outfit that I put on and, you know, I'm feeling good in the baby blue. I got on some tan chinos. And it's feeling good, man. I got on here and you complimented me as soon as I got on with my outfit. So I'm like, cool. You know, I'm feeling good, brother. Like the energy is high.
Yeah. I was looking at your Instagram before we jumped on and you did an Instagram live in a full suit and tie with a hat, like looking sharp. And I had not seen that before in all my days of Instagram. I've not seen somebody just from their house or from their office rocking up in a suit, but maybe you could speak to why that's important to you.
Yeah. You know, I had a mentor, his name is Chris Dietrich, when I worked at Verizon Wireless, and he told me two things that have always stayed with me. One was about your wardrobe and how you look. And the other was about your proximity and your mobility. When I was in Illinois, working at Verizon, I was always up for like the next promotion when I was trying to go from like the sales rep position to an assistant manager. And I mean, the competition is cutthroat, you know, the competition is real cutthroat. It's a lot of competition in that market. And I'm always like the last person. It's like me and one other person. And it was like three times where someone else got the role. And so, you know, I went to go talk to Chris because I'm like, Chris, I'm one of the top performers. I got good education. I got a good reputation. You know, I just don't understand, you know, why I'm not getting this role for assistant manager. Like, I know I'm ready for it. And, you know, he was like, yeah, he was a director. So he was like three levels above me because it would be assistant manager, store manager, district manager, and then the director. So I didn't even report like directly to him. He didn't even need to spend time talking to me. But I mean, he was a great mentor. He's a great leader. And so he goes, Sylvester, I want you to understand that in life, your success might not come in the street that you live in. You have to always be mobile because the next promotion for you might be across the country. The next promotion for you might be outside of the country. And he's like, you know, at this point in my life, I've already moved 10 different times for different roles. That's how I'm a director now. It's because I'm willing to go to Virginia. I'm willing to go to Asia. I'm willing to go to California. I don't have a home base. My career is my home base. You know, and I was like 23 years old when I heard that. So I'm like, wow, like that's inspiring, you know, to see this. He was probably, if I had to guess, probably like 37, 36 at the time. You know, so to me, he was an elder, a man I respected. And just to see him say, like, my career is my home, like I'm willing to go wherever to advance my career, like that was like he opened up a channel in my brain that I had never even thought about. So literally that day, I just went home and I started applying in the company at assistant manager roles just across the country. And then it gave me such a freedom because I was like, man, like I want to pick where I want to be. So I started picking. I picked California. I picked Florida. I picked Arizona. Those are the only three places I applied to, you know, because I wanted to live in one of those three places. And like, lo and behold, I got an opportunity in Arizona. And the manager, Chad, he was like, hey, he's like, we love everything about you. Like, you got to come right now. Like, how soon can you be here? And so it was crazy to go from like the city I lived in, rejection, 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 to someone else outside of that pocket was like, yo, we need you right now. Like, come right now. Like, pack your stuff and like, let's like move across country. Let's go. You know, and like that was one of the like just the biggest things for me that I learned from Chris. And the other thing that he taught me is he always said, he's like, hey, you got to look the part. You know, if you're a personal trainer and you're out of shape, you're overweight, you're not flexible, you're not strong. If that's me, right? If I'm out of shape, I'm not flexible, I'm not strong. How are you going to help me as a personal trainer? You don't look the part, right? If you go into, you drop your kid off at school. All right. And the teacher is dressed like a Lucha Libre, which is a wrestler, like a Mexican wrestler with the mask, you know, got all the gear on the arm, no shirt, just drenched in sweat. You're going to think to yourself, yo, this dude needs to go to a wrestling match. Like, what is he about to teach my kid? Like, this dude can't teach my kid anything, you know? So there is something to be said about looking the part. And the truth is that, you know, they say, don't judge a book by your cover. Well, that's the truth. We judge books by their cover, just like we judge other people by our first impression of them, you know? And so there's this thing that I was talking with someone about, like, also just as, I didn't want to bring up race, but I just feel like as a Black man, when I look at other successful Black men, like, I see them, you know, being well-dressed. Like, I see them taking pride in their appearance and how they look. You know, when I'm looking at like a Cedric the Entertainer, a Steve Harvey, heck, Kevin Hart, when I look at guys like that, they're dressed, they're well-dressed, you know? And so for me, it's like, you know, I got hella opportunity to wear my sweatpants, and which I just was wearing because I was at the gym, you know? But if I'm going to be doing something, I made this switch in my mind where I'm like, you know what? If I'm going to do something, like, I want to look the part. Like, I want to look like an author. I want to look like someone you can trust. I want to look like someone who knows what they're talking about. And there's just subtle changes you can make, like, in your wardrobe to gain that authority, right? Because the truth is, someone's going to look at you and they're going to be like, no, he can't talk about that, or she can't talk about that, because you don't look the part. So yeah, that's why I was like, you know what, man, I'm about to get on this Instagram live. Let me make sure I'm feeling good. Now, granted, that's what I wore yesterday. That's what I wore all day yesterday. It wasn't just for the Instagram live, but, you know, got to look the part.
So just to clarify, you were in a suit and tie like the whole day while you were working by yourself? Oh, yeah. from home.
Yeah. So like, I went to the gym. No, actually, I didn't go to the gym in the morning. I started working in the morning yesterday. So yeah, I had a few coaching calls and I had a few things I needed to do with inside of my business. So yeah, I was suit and tie all day, went to the grocery store, suit and tie, had my hat, and did my Instagram live, suit and tie. And then I wore that to the gym and changed at the gym. And then when I left the gym, I didn't wear that. I just was in my sweaty clothes and, you know, I came on home. But yeah, I mean, it's something to be said too. You know, I've been working from home for like 10 to 12 years now. And so there, the majority of the time you wear a sweatshirt, you wear a T-shirt, you might put on a button up and wear basketball shorts. But there's just something about, it's like that, my favorite show from a kid, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. You ever seen it?
I know, I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like they're regular teenagers, but then when they pull out their little diamond or whatever, and they just hit that phrase, like, it's Morphin time. You know, they get their ninja outfit, they get their helmet, they get their swords, and then they're ready for that role. Like, they're ready for that part. So I like it. I like that, where it's like, you know what? It's Morphin time. Let me put on my cologne. Let me smell good. Like, it's not even about, see, when you go to work, the idea is like when you go to an office, the idea is like, let me make sure that I look acceptable to everyone else. Like, you're not thinking about, let me make sure I feel good for me. See, dressing well gives you more confidence. And if I'm doing, for example, I'm doing work where I need to appear confident in what I'm speaking in order for, first of all, for people to benefit, but then as a business owner, in order for people to trust me and to buy my products, I need to be confident. Well, one of the best ways you can be confident is take a shower, smell good, make sure your hair is how you like it, make sure you have a good outfit on, and you just appear more confident. You know, so really dressing well is for me to appear confident. It's not for like some type of validation for like, it is for the validation of, I think he's confident, let me listen to him. That it is that, You know, but it's not like I need you to validate that I'm attractive, or I need you to validate that like I look good. It's not that type of, it's not like an ego validation.
It sounds like it relates to energy. Like, I know you're a big energy guy. And mm-hmm. when you were describing that, I think I may have even described you as like having a vibe. Like, it's a vibe. I picture you spraying your cologne on and tying up the last knot of that tie and just having a bit of a swagger of like, all right.
Yeah.
Like, I know you well enough now to be like, picture you just being like, let's go, baby. Like, it's on now.
Man. Look, and I'm, you know, I'm an introvert, man. So I could go a whole day without talking to anybody, but you're going to feel me because it's the energy, man. You know, it's the energy. You damn right. Before, while I'm taking a shower, I got my music playing in the background, setting the vibe. I'm washing the beard. I'm smiling. I'm grateful. It's all about the energy. Yesterday, this blue shirt, I just bought this shirt yesterday. When I went to the store yesterday, I went because I was looking. I'm like, man, I don't have enough polos. Like, the polos I've had for years. So I'm at that point where I need to replace my polos. I said, okay, let me go to the store. Let me get me three polos. You get your black, you get your white, and then you get any color. So this was the color I picked. So when I picked this color, I'm like, man, I don't have anything baby blue. Like, a smile came over my face. Like, the energy of joy came over my face, right? So literally, I was waiting all day and all night to put this on today, just to wear this shirt, this polo, you know. So the energy is everything. The energy is everything, man.
Yeah. And so even just for me hearing that backstory and now recognizing that when we jumped on and I complimented you on how you looked, like,
yeah,
it's like, that's got to feel good, man.
Yep.
You've been waiting a whole day to put this shirt on and you're greeted with like recognition.
Like, hey, yeah. That lets me know the plan worked.
Maybe can you maybe speak more to the energy piece? Like, I know you've got a new book out. I know your work really well. Like, we've been friends for years. I've read and talked to you like monthly for years now, I feel like. And I know that energy is like a core way that you view the world, or like a lens through which you view life.
Yeah.
Maybe you could sort of synthesize some of that for those listening that associate energy with this spiritual woo-woo stuff, or like maybe they don't fully understand what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, the way I see it, man, energy is everything. It's wholeness. Like, healing means wholeness, you know. And I see everything as a big picture. As a writer, I'm always looking for the beginning, middle, and end. I'm always looking for, you know, the conflict. I'm always looking for the plot. I'm always looking for the plot twist. Like, it all has energy. Everything. Like, last night, I watched The Notebook last night. First time I seen The Notebook since it came out, like way back in the day. And, you know, obviously when you watch it when you're younger, you're watching it through like lover's eyes because you're a teenager, you're young. But then now I'm watching it through like the adult's eyes, and I'm looking at the society they're living in. I'm looking at their parents. And the thing that made that story so good is just the energy they had between each other. Like, the energy was just magnetic. Their situation wasn't perfect, but the energy was so strong and it was so magnetic that it was powerful enough to like overcome these roadblocks, you know? And it was like that recognition. Like, there was a scene in there where the two main characters, they had split up for a while. Like, they split. And then the girl, she was about to marry somebody, and the guy was just lonely. And he's, just for anyone who hasn't heard it, the guy was lonely. All he could think about was her. And the local reporter took a picture of the guy standing in front of this house that he built. Now, the house that he built was a promise to her when they were younger, to the girl when they were younger. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to fix this house up. This is going to be our house in the future. So the girl that's now, you know, years removed, it lives in a different city, she's about to get married, and she like at her like she's like trying on her gown, and like at this moment where she's got her gown on, she's got all her friends on, someone shows her the paper, and they're like, oh, look at this amazing thing that's happened in the paper. And like in the lower right hand corner, there's an image of her you know, childhood sweetheart standing next to the house. He painted the house white and put blue shutters on it, which is the exact thing that she asked for. Like, when she was dreaming of her future, she passed out, right? She passes out. The reason she passes out is because the energy of that picture made her go somewhere, not only in her past, but in her future. That's energy. That's all that is energy. It's like the energy of that moment was so overwhelming for her that she passed out. So she ends up going back down there. They're hanging out. They're talking. And she's like, all right, I'm out. I was stupid for coming here. Like, this conflict happened. She's like, I was stupid for coming here. But I'm leaving. And he goes, no, you're not leaving. You're not going anywhere. This is going to be hard. I want you to be with me. I want to be with you forever. It's not that he knew he needed to be with her. It's that he knew that energy he felt with her, he's never felt with anybody ever in life. And when you have that electricity, and that's obviously we're talking about like dating, but when you have that electricity, you can't ignore it. You can't. And that's also why he was miserable, because the energy he had with her just didn't compare, you know. And so that's like a dating example of how we see energy. But another example is, you can't see this off the camera, but before I sat down with you, I made a little protein shake, and I have my water over here. It's like, we get water, we get energy from nutrition as well. You know, my dad was a nutritionist, and he used to always talk to us about eating well, about micronutrients, about vitamins, minerals, you know, protein, carbs, fat, alcohol, all those things. He used to always talk to us because, what was it? Correct me if I'm wrong. Was it Socrates that said, let food be thy medicine? Was that Socrates?
I'm a little bit uneducated in my Greek philosopher.
Okay, quotes, hold on. But let's get this. Let's make sure we're saying the accurate thing. Let food be thy medicine. I think it was Socrates.
I think it's two parts. And then, and medicine be thy food, I think is the second part.
Oh, it was Hippocrates. Okay. Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. Yeah.
I think that's from where the Hippocratic Oath comes from, that dude.
Yes, him. Yes.
No harm.
And for me, that's the other big thing about energy, and, you know, not just food, like on the cellular level, but all things related to, like, what am I putting in my body? What am I putting in my mind? What type of environment am I choosing to surround myself in? Like, all of those things create an energy. They sustain an energy. You know, like, for example, if you wake up every day and let's just say you watch a talk show, and that talk show is dramatic, rumors, people talking about each other, it's negativity. That's the landscape. That's going to be the landscape of your brain. Like, your energy is going to be based in drama, negativity, who said this, who said that, divisiveness. But if you wake up and you use your language in your brain to, let's just say, think about how you want your day to go in the most positive, hopeful, optimistic way. Let's say you wake up and you think about what you're grateful for, your heartbeat, your lungs, your ability to walk, your ability to heal, your ability to laugh, your ability to that you have cold water and hot water, that you have, even if you don't have a lot of food, you have some food. Anybody listening to this has some type of luxury in their life. And when you're able to just look at your life that way, through the input of observation of your life, your energy increases. But when you look at it as like, I don't have this, I don't have that, this sucks, this person hates me, your energy decreases. And energy for me is so important because I have this tattoo right here that says master of my fate. Like, I strongly believe with all of my heart that, like, we are the creators of our reality. Like, it's our, like, you hear the phrase personality. Like, this is your personal reality. And my personal reality, I'm the creator of my reality. You know, not that doesn't mean I control everything, because no one does, but I'm going to do my best to control myself, not even control, but to influence myself in the best way possible for the outcomes that I want. And that's all energy based to me.
And what sort of strategies or methods do you use to manage your energy?
Yeah, the first and foremost is mindset. Man, it's mindset. If I'm losing, I believe that there is a way to win. If things are going wrong, I believe that there's a way I can get it right. If I'm down, I believe I can get up. It's mindset. It's no matter what, I feel like there's, Les Brown used to always say, it's possible. Like, whatever I'm looking for, like, I believe it's possible. I truly believe that, you know, that phrase, like, oh, whatever you want to set your mind to, you know, if you set your mind to it, you can do it. I was told that as a kid. So I believe that. I drink the milk and cookies on it. I believe it. And I've seen it. I have the evidence in my life that if you actually set your mind to things, have some type of plan, and just show up consistently, you'll get what you're looking for. Maybe you don't get the exact image, but you'll get some version of the image that is going to serve you. So mindset. Another tool I have or that anyone has access to is elimination. Elimination. I think Tim Ferriss wrote about elimination in his book, you know, the 4-hour work week, when he was talking about ways that we can, you know, make more money and work less. A lot of people spend so much time doing things that are a waste of their time or energy. So like, for example, for $30, I can have a lady come pick up my laundry. I hate doing laundry. I hate it. I'll do it if I have to. I can do it. I'm capable of doing it, but I genuinely don't like doing it. For $30, I can completely eliminate that. So why not do it? Why not set myself up so for 30 bucks, I can eliminate something I don't enjoy? You know, another thing, I used to hate driving to work. I couldn't, and it's not because I don't like driving. It's because at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, the people who are driving to work, first of all, they leave late. So because they're leaving late, they're going to cut you off. They're driving fast. They're driving aggressive. Driving is a stress event for me, for the most part, at that time in the morning. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, like, is there a way I can avoid these people? Well, the only way for me to avoid these people was not to not work when they worked. And that's when I said to myself, I need to make a business where I don't have to be driving to make my money. I need to be able to just go anywhere. And so for me, I figured out just all these things I could eliminate to just create the life that I want. You know, that doesn't mean that everything is perfect, but you just eliminate the things that you don't want. You can delegate or you can eliminate. Really the same thing. Delegate is someone else do it. Eliminate is like, let's just get rid of this. I think that can help you with your energy as well. Another thing that can help you with your energy that's a tool is your environment. And there's a few ways to look at this, because there's obviously other people that's in your environment, and other people can impact and influence the environment, but they can also, you know, inspire you or uplift you. So being mindful of the environment you're in, you know, like if you're lazy, I guarantee you, you're around 5 lazy people, 10 lazy people. I guarantee it. If you think to yourself, man, I'm just not doing what I need to be doing, or I'm not doing enough, it's because the other people around you don't. And they justify you and they validate your laziness. And that's part of the reason why we choose people like that. But if you, let's just say you're like, what's that phrase? A go-getter. I guarantee you have other go-getters around you. So in some capacity, you got people pushing you. You got people going for it. You know, so your environment is everything. If you're trying to, let's say you're trying to be healthier and you live with people who make a bunch of just say unhealthy decisions, most likely your mind's going to tell you either one, I need to change these people, or two, I need to change my boundaries, or three, I need to just get out of this environment. Those are like the only solutions for it. I've lived with alcoholics before. I lived with two alcoholics, and that was my solution. It was like, all right, change them. Can I change them? Probably not. Can I make boundaries with them? Well, these are people that don't care about boundaries. Alcoholics don't care about boundaries. So probably not. And it means I gotta get up out of here. You know, and so option three is how you like free yourself from those type of spaces. Then you create your own environment.
Yeah, the conscious choices, the agency, the making better decisions, etc. Yeah, it reminds me, like, I got gifted this plant from a friend of ours that was moving out. Long story, but this plant was like the worst looking plant you've ever seen. Like the leaves were translucent, it was limp. It looked like crap, man. The soil was like hard. There was like white stuff growing on it. And so I transplanted it. I like put it in a different pot with different soil, moved it closer to the light, gave it some water, and lo and behold, thing's thriving now. It's like it's down behind me. It's green, it's lush, it's blooming. And I think what you're describing there is just imagining that you're a plant that can walk around and make decisions. It's like you got to move yourself closer to the light. You got to move yourself out of the dark. Like you got to get out of these pesticide people that are spreading the chemicals around you and stopping your growth. And just to your point about, I think minimization is like when you're saying no to something, you're also saying yes to something else. And so you might reestablish a relationship. You said, no, like I can't live here. And what you're also saying is yes to possibilities, like yes to other options, yes to self-worth and honoring your life, et cetera. And I think that's a big part that people sometimes don't necessarily see in the moment. Is like they're so focused on the no and the pain of leaving, the difficult conversation, that they neglect to realize that that no is also saying yes to all of the glory, all of the possibility, all the abundance. I know you're a big proponent of that. Anything come up for you there?
Well, it's like you're a kid on the monkey bars, you know, and when you get on those monkey bars and you're swinging, in order for you to go forward, you need two things. You need momentum, which is literal movement, which could also be physical energy, right? And then you also have to have the hope and the belief that you're going to be able to grasp that bar, that rung that's in front of you. And, you know, you don't hold it forever, but you hold it long enough to transfer your energy and your body, your momentum. But in order to do that, right, in order to actually keep going forward on the monkey bars, you 100% have to release the monkey bar rung behind you. You have to. And what's interesting about it is when you release, if you actually go through the monkey bars, you never see yourself let go of that monkey bar. But you can always see yourself grabbing what's in front of you. And that's the important thing that we have to remember when we're saying yes to things that are behind us. When we're saying yes to these things that are behind us, that we've already identified as behind us or beneath us or killing us or hurting us or harming us, we're literally saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to keep choosing this thing that I'm literally past, but I'm going to keep choosing it. And every time you do that, you cannot grab that monkey bar that's in front of you. So you go from having momentum and having energy to now you're just in a hang. Now you're just going to hang there. And eventually your arms are going to give out and you fall.
Yeah. And even on the monkey bars, you feel like you're swinging backwards or that you're moving backwards. But what's actually happening is you're building up potential energy to move yourself forward and make progress. I feel like that's another part of life that I've experienced where I'm like, man, it's not working out for me. I keep coming up against walls. I'm regressing, not realizing that, oh, tomorrow might be the day when everything pops and the thing happens. How do you motivate or encourage yourself to continue when it feels like you're stagnating or things aren't working out as you think they should? Anything energetic or mental about that?
No, I don't struggle with motivation. I wake up every day and I'm motivated. Like you gotta understand.
Eric Thomas, man.
Yeah, I don't have time for that. I don't have time for like, oh, how am I going to motivate myself today? I don't care about that. Like, I got to get up and I got to find a way, you know, and society is different, you know, than it was when I was born and raised. But my father, he wanted to raise men, you know, and as a man, we don't have time to be unmotivated. Being unmotivated is probably the worst thing you can be as a man. I don't know if I could say that for women because I've never lived in a woman's body. So I don't know. But I know as a man, you can't be unmotivated. You have to be motivated. You got to find a way. You know, it's too much, especially when you have other people depending on you. You know, when you have other people depending on you, it's like we're not allowed to just be like, yeah, I'm not motivated today. I don't have it. What? You don't have it? What you mean you don't have it? Like, I don't have it today. Now, you know, that's not to say that, you know, don't be honest with where you are. That's not to say don't be, you know, authentic. If that's truly how you feel, then you have the permission to do that. But the question was, you asked me about me. So I'm just speaking for me. For me, I have motivation every day, every single day. And for me, it's simple. Like I don't even look for grand, massive things every day. It's little things. My motivation is little things. Yesterday, my motivation was I want to go find a shirt, that a polo. Like that was my motivation yesterday. My motivation yesterday was to look good. I looked good. My motivation today was to go to the gym in the morning. You know, so anything else I do today is going to be great. I'm going to play with my son today. I'm doing a great podcast with a friend. I'm going to do some deep work. I'm going to listen to some music. I'm going to eat some really good, tasty food. But my only motivation today was to make sure I went to the gym, you know? And so I just think if anyone's hearing this and they're like, man, I struggle with motivation, just start small. Part of the reason people struggle with motivation is because they're trying to do too many things. I want to do this with finances. I want to do this with my body. I want to do this with my party. I want to travel here. I want to, like, you have too many goals. And I'm not saying don't be ambitious, but I'm just saying simplify it. Simplify it. For 3 months, have one goal. One goal for 3 months, and that's all you're doing. And let everything else go. I'm not saying let everything go, like, don't be an adult about it or don't be responsible. But the bigger goals, let them all go. Focus on one thing for 3 months. That's your only goal for 3 months. And then motivation becomes to get easy. Because motivation doesn't last anyways. Like, you don't need motivation. More, what I care about more than motivation is your rituals. You know, a habit is just, so the difference between a habit and a ritual, a habit is something that you just do over and over and over. I get up, I make my bed, I drink water, I set my intention for the day. That's just my habit. But a habit doesn't really mean anything. There's no emotional connection with a habit. That's just what I like to do. A ritual, there's an emotional significance to the ritual. A ritual, your birthday party, parties that we have for religious celebrations, remembrance and honoring that we have for maybe people who have passed away within our family, like Day of the Dead in the Mexican culture. See, a ritual has that emotional capacity. And so the more you can move away from motivation to your rituals, the better it is. For me, my ritual is I have to take care of my body. I have to go to the gym. If I'm not going to the gym, I'm going to yoga. If I'm not going to yoga, I'm going for a walk. If I can't physically go, then I'm going to do it in my home. I have to do it because it's an emotional thing for me, for my body to feel tight, or excuse me, for my body to feel loose, for my body to feel strong, for me to have that mind-body connection, that mind-body axis, that connection. Like, I need that. I am my best self when I focus on that. I'm my best self in my relationships, in my business, friendship. I am terrible when I don't hit that lever. And that's all it is. It's a lever. So for me, the ritual is that lever that gives me the motivation. So I don't ever think about motivation. I just think about what's really important to me. That was a great question, Jeremy.
Thanks, Sly. I find it sometimes, well, it sounds like what you're talking about here is integrity, meaning, you know, this is how I've decided to be as Sylvester McNutt III. Like, this is who I am. And a person like me does stuff like this. And when I say that I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to fucking do that thing. And I'm going to follow through. And you've built up through that repetitive process of having tiny little steps and collecting evidence through time, you've like built up that personality or identity to be a human being that's like, no, we go. And I feel that from you. Like, if I had to bet on a guy, if I was like on a quiz show and they're like, which one of your friends would wear a 3-piece suit to conduct an Instagram live, I'd be like, Sylvester McNutt III, hands down. It's like, which of your friends like needs no motivation to get out of bed because he's da da da. I'd be like, oh, that's Sly. But I imagine there was a time in your life when you weren't this exact version of yourself, right? So there must have been like some kind of a transition phase or a series of decisions, or you just always like from day one
always wired. Yeah, wired this way. I really wish I had a story about like, and then at this moment I became like,
even as a little kid, like as far as you remember,
same. It was worse when I was a kid because I didn't have no responsibility. So I just was putting in, I'd be like, for example, I would go outside and play all day. I would play all the sports. Like, literally I would work out for like 8 hours, baseball, basketball, football. My mom would be like, hey, did you eat? Nah. She's like, why didn't you eat? Like, you've been outside all day riding, but like, I'm just, why? Like, I wake up and I'm just ready to go. You know, I'm just ready to go. I was a gifted student when I was younger. You know, and it was because school was really slow for me. School was so slow. I used to sit in class and just be bored. Like, what are we doing? Why does it take 16 weeks to teach this? We could have this done in 3 to 4 weeks, wrap this up. Let's get back to the summertime. Like, I don't need to be sitting in this class. You know, so I would always look forward. I would do the assignments ahead of time. I would read ahead of time. I would do the work ahead of time. I'm just wired that way, man. I'm just wired that way. And, you know, sometimes I lose it. Sometimes I do lose it. You know, sometimes, like, for example, one of the things that causes me to lose it is extreme weather. Wintertime in Chicago, summertime in Arizona. Those are the hardest times for me. When that weather is messed up like that, I lose it. I lose my discipline. And it's hard. It's a battle. And I have to, like, tell myself, like, all right, get back. Come on. Come on. Come on. And then I'm like, nah, man, it's too hot. It's 115. Where I'm living in Chicago, it's like negative 10. Like, so I think my next evolution is, and this is something I'm working on, is how do I still show up for what I need when I have exterior conflicts like the weather? That's the one thing that I think I'm working on. Because if the weather is perfect, I'm fine. I hit everything I need to do. When the weather's not perfect, I struggle. It's like, that's when I need motivation. I'm like, hey man, come on, get up. You know?
You gotta channel that David Goggins vibe of like, so there's that vibe. And then there's this line, when I lived in American Samoa, they said, there's this traditional expression, which is something like, when it's sunny, enjoy the sun. When it's raining, enjoy the rain. And to me, it's about finding that equanimous place of like, okay, like I am not going to let myself be influenced by what is outside of me. I'm going to focus on what I can control, and I'm going to really hone down into that. And it sounds like what you're describing there is like the next level or the next.
Yeah, that's iteration. The next level I'm trying to get to, because I can't have peace within. Because it feels like an excuse to me. If I'm like, hey, this external thing is happening and then it's changing me, that to me feels like an excuse. And so what I'm trying to do is rid myself of the excuses, because my next level requires me to reduce all excuses. You know, and this summer I feel like was the best summer of the last 4 or 5 summers around battling said excuse. Because the last 3 to 4 summers, I've made that excuse and I dealt with the consequences of that excuse. In the spring, I set my intention to make sure that this summer I didn't have that excuse come up. And so, like I was talking about earlier, making sure you have like one goal. My goal for the summer was to make sure I don't give myself any excuses. And now that we're almost in October, I can tell you I succeeded. I didn't give myself any excuses. And now I'm reaping different consequences. It's so funny, when we talk about something negative, we use the word consequences. But when we talk about something positive, we use the word benefits. Well, it's like it's both. You have consequences that are positive too. You know, so this summer was great for me to, like, I guess, say pilot or test what would happen if I didn't give in to the excuses and I just, quote unquote, fought through. And so now next summer is going to be my big test, because I'm not going to set an intention. Like, I want to see if my rituals just take me past my potential excuses.
Just let it go? Or like, what would be the plan there?
To not even think about it. To get to the point where your ritual is so strong and the discipline to the ritual is so prominent that you don't have to prepare yourself or set an intention or set a goal or set a plan, because it just takes care of itself.
It sounds like a test of how embodied you are in that practice, right? It's like, if every morning you're like, hey, be generous, be confident, don't forget to be kind today. And you're like, no. Like, let me just see how ingrained that is now. Like, I think.
Yeah, you got to test it. That's the thing with personal development work. A lot of the things that we're learning and doing and teaching, it can feel heavy to a lot of people, because it's like, well, how long do I have to do this? Well, you only have to do it as long enough until you integrate it. Like, well, once you integrate it, you don't think about it anymore, ever, really. Yeah. Right. It's like, I have healthy boundaries in my life. So I don't personally think to myself, I got to get better at my boundaries. Well, I don't need to, because I already do that. But if you suck at boundaries, then yeah, you do need to take a boundaries course. Yeah, you do need to talk to a therapist about it, so you can like learn that framework to start to get it ingrained in you. But once you integrate it, you don't talk about boundaries anymore. You talk about ramen noodles and water and Pokemon and all the other stuff that exists in the world. You know,
Yeah, I was hoping we'd talk about ramen noodles and Pokemon. But okay. In my experience, also, there's just perpetual challenges or up-leveling. It's like, yeah, I'm good at boundaries now. And I feel like life, this is how I view the world, man. I just picture there's like this energetic deity, let's just call him God, looking down at us, right? The universe. And like those bouncers at the clubs that have those lapel mics or the earpieces, and they like, you know, yeah. They like,
yeah, grab their
collar and they talk,
like, come get this guy out of here.
Yeah, we got a fucking troublemaker in the front row. Like, get your ass over here. And then they swarm you, right? But I just picture there's this benevolent universal force, and we call it God, looking down at us, and he's like watching me. And he's like, yeah, Jeremy, like, you got boundaries now. He's like, oh, I'm going to test you again. It's like, oh, you got good boundaries now. And then I see him like whisper into his collared lapel mic, like, all right, bro, like, send in the real test. And it's like the new boss, like, gets dropped down on the universe, on the earth. And I'm like, oh, shit, man, it's like a new level. That's kind of how I view it. And anytime I feel like, I don't know about you, but like in my early 20s, I was like, now I understand how women are. Like, late 20s, I was like, oh, now I get it. I understand relationships now. And then it was like, God is like, yeah, send in the next universal challenge for this fucking naive knucklehead. And I just get put right back in my place. And so I find life to be this perpetual humbling or initiation or up-leveling, where I'm being invited forward to these new lessons. That makes sense?
Oh, that makes perfect sense. So I play fantasy football, and my fantasy football name is Final Boss. And so, well, that's what you're referring to, is like when you think you've got it, you think you've done it, and then you got to come beat that final boss. You know, it's like, you know, and like, I think back to my childhood, I used to play this game called Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. And, you know, you can go through the tower and you can beat like 12 opponents. And then in order to win the tower, you got to beat the final boss. The final boss is faster than you. They're stronger than you. They recover quicker than you. And your punches and your kicks do nothing to them. And so if you don't have like a perfect match, you never beat the final boss. And I can't tell you the countless in Mortal Kombat, the final boss, his name was Shao Kahn. And in Street Fighter, the final boss, his name was M. Bison. I can't tell you how many times as a kid I had to turn the game off because I couldn't beat the final boss. And like, I was just so pissed off for trying for like 3, 4, 5 hours. Life is the same way as that video game analogy. It's like, oh, yeah, I got boundaries. Or, yeah, I'm good with my money. Or, yeah, I'm good with the gym. And then all of a sudden, it's like, are you really? Here's the final boss. What are you going to do with it?
I love this so much. And the other thing is, you never, ever beat the final boss on the first try. It's like, it's like part of the joy of the gaming experience. You're like, oh, damn. And then he does some surprising shit. And you're like, what? I'm dead? And you have to start again. You have to start again.
Yep.
I pictured two, this is an older one, but Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Did you ever play Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. Oh, yeah.
And Mike Tyson was the final boss.
Yeah.
It was just like, boop, 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 dead. And you're like, what? Yep. How am I going to beat Mike Tyson?
Mike Tyson Punch-Out, taking me back.
All right, bro. Where do we go from here? Do you want to talk about your new book?
I mean, it's your house, man. I'm just here.
We don't have to. I know that it's your 10th book, which is astonishing to me, man. Maybe you could just say something about what's the difference between the first book and the 10th book? How did you write 10 books? Like, that is an achievement. You're not even like, you don't have gray hair, man. Like, you're still early in your career.
I do, but thank you. I think, so the question was, what's the difference between the first and the 10th? The first, nobody knows you. There's no pressure. You have total freedom. There's no expectation. It can be terrible. It can be great. Doesn't matter. You're just committed to the art and to the practice, and everything is just about, it's really just about you. You know, the 10th book that I just turned in to Hay House, I'm signed to Hay House, a publisher, one of the top publishers in the world. And it's different because there's other people who will have input on my book. Oh, we should say this, or we should say this, or we should say it like this. I haven't thought so much about pressure for sales, but there is a pressure for sales because the expectation in the contract is that, hey, we're going to buy the rights to your book and support you. And the expectations that we're going to sell a certain amount of copies, you know, so there's an expectation up to performance, as well as there's a perception, you know, that when you're validated by such a powerful publishing house, like there's a perception of quality that is an expectation of the work now. Excuse me, you know, so it's different. But at the core, though, it's still the same thing as a writer. You know, you still have a topic that you're curious about or that you're knowledgeable on or a story that you want to tell. And essentially, is you're still committed to the art and to the practice of being a writer, being a storyteller. That will never change, no matter how much money you make or how many followers you may get, or no matter if people love you, hate you, that doesn't change. You're still an artist, and you still owe it to the art to commit, you know, to give your best to the art.
Is that how you navigated that? Like going back to first principles of, look, I just got to get words on a page. I just got to write the best book I can.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I was really curious about a few different things and about like how I could say some things in a certain way. And it was just like a testament. Also, I wanted to get better as a writer. You know, I feel like whatever you're doing in your profession, you should be trying to get better, you know, if the profession allows. And so for me, I really was trying to become a better writer with how I was saying what I was saying and like the actual practice of it too. You know, so that's what I was trying to prove to myself, trying to prove that like I'm a good enough writer for other people to read. That doesn't even exist for me. Like, I don't care about that because I'm validated. You know, for me, though, it's like, no, you do need to keep getting better. You can't be comfortable with where you are. You got to keep improving.
Do you read the reviews?
No.
Like the Amazon reviews?
No.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
For the reasons you just stated, like staying on your game or what?
No, I just don't care. I genuinely don't care. I'm appreciative if it's like a 5-star review, we loved it. If it's like a 1-star review, you're terrible, go back to college, I wish, like, I need a refund. I don't care.
Yeah.
I just don't care. Brene Brown talked about it. I think the book was Dare to Lead. She was talking about people in the cheap seats.
Yeah.
You know, so like if you're at the NBA finals and you have to game 5, you have to shoot the game winning shot and you miss it. Like you're the one with the big nuts. You're the one with everything on the line. You're the one wearing the jersey. You're the one with the blood, sweat, and tears. But here I am in the 300 level, seat 329, all the way in the top of the arena, talking about, oh, you suck. I knew you were going to miss. Yeah, I'm in the cheap seats. I paid $20 to get in here. That person put in 25 years to get here. So why should that person who's at the NBA finals taking game 5 shot, why should they care what I have to say?
Yeah.
That's how I look at it.
Can I offer an idea for you to consider?
Yeah.
So I'm the same. Like there's part of me that's like, nah, I don't want to read the reviews of my book. But I looked, your new book has 1,759 reviews on Amazon, which I read that and I was like, that's a lot of reviews. And I scrolled through some of them just quickly, and there are several that I read just in 5 minutes that are like very touching and very heartwarming and like really beautiful testimonials to the impact of your work and your words. And so my idea would be like, what if you got somebody for an hour to just collate some of the good ones that are like meaningful and just like let you read that as an example of just the power of your words. And I know that you know that you're powerful and that you're a good writer, but I just think there's something really special about getting, I'm sure you've got these, like a message or an email from someone that's like, yo, like I need to share a bit of my heart with you and tell you how important you are and how much you matter to me. And I don't know, there's just something for me personally that I find that to be heartwarming. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of gold in there that can be sort of touched upon without being affected by it, you know?
Sounds like you just signed yourself up.
Yeah, man. They'll send you an invoice. But seriously, I read a couple of, because I haven't read your new book. Like it's in the mail, I think, from Hay House. But I was like, oh, what's the vibe? I was trying to like get the vibe, you know, what are people saying? And there was just, you know, within 3 minutes, I was like, damn, like this guy's written a book that's getting responses like this. I was really impressed. And I was also just really proud of you, man. Like you're doing good work.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Or you're like, you're paying good friends to leave great reviews on Amazon. But maybe like, okay, while we're on the topic, like what's the new book about? Like, who's it for? Yeah. Like, what's the energy of it? Why'd you write it?
Yeah. So my newest book is actually one of my older books that we republished. It's Care Package, Harnessing the Power of Self-Compassion to Healing Thrive. I believe that healing is the key to success. So many of us are struggling with a lot of different things. You know, some people have addictions that are loud. Some people have addictions that are silent. Some of us have trauma. Some of us have pain. Some of us have wounds. Some of us have issues with codependency or with boundaries or with not having our voice or finding our voice. Some of us just have troubles letting go of things that were where we were wronged, where someone took advantage of us. You know, and all of these things, they prevent us. You know, some of us are dealing with shame, guilt, and fear. And that's what those are all the topics in the book that I wanted to write about. You know, people pleasing, boundaries, letting go, moving on. Because as we stay, I truly believe that as we stay in these energetic places where we are lessened or minimized, I feel like we're creating from that consciousness. And the more that we can move away from, oh, my parents are alcoholics, I'm this, I'm that. It's like, okay, how long do you tell that story? Like, how long do you make that important? Like, how long, like, is that even the whole story? Like, is there more to, like, healing means wholeness. So tell the whole story. It's like your parents weren't just alcoholics. My dad went to the United States Army. He went to college. He's college educated. He went and had 5 kids. He was a dietitian. He started his own gym and taught hundreds of people how to do karate and jiu-jitsu. My mother was the first Black woman to work at this corporation called Butler Paper Company. Not only was she the first woman, but she was the first Black woman in the 90s when things weren't, you know, the way they are now. My mother was the one to make sure that I always had a thesaurus and a dictionary. When I came home from school, she instilled discipline in me to make sure that the first thing I did was my homework. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it. As soon as I walk in the door every day, go to the table and do your homework. That's what she would say. And she would instill that discipline in me. My father would get me up at 6 o'clock every Saturday morning when I'm a kid and I'm sitting here trying to watch cartoons. He's like, no, you're going to get up at 6 and you're going to do something. You're going to go for a run. You're going to clean. You're going to do something. He said, you're not sleeping in at my house. I'm like, bro, I get up every day, Monday through Friday. I'm playing sports. He said, but you don't get up every day on Sunday, on Saturday. So you're getting up at 6. So this is one of the things that I want people to do is like, look at how you're telling your story. If the only thing you say is my parents were alcoholics. Okay. Oh, we pity you. We feel sad for you. You're a victim. You stay stuck in that victim mentality. Validate me because my parents were alcoholics. Oh, feel sorry for me. Get the fuck out of here with that. That's not how you heal. That's not how you create the life you want. Like, yes, my parents were alcoholic and they did all those other great things for me. They made sacrifices for me to go to a great school. They made sacrifices for me to get out of a bad neighborhood. So I got to do something with what they gave me. I got to make the best of myself. I owe it to them. I owe it to my grandparents. Like, I owe it to all the families tree that came before me. Like, they didn't do all the sacrifices they did so I could just sit up here and bitch and complain about my pain and my trauma. Work through it. Get the help that you need to work through it. You know, if you're addicted to some type of substance, get help with it. Stop thinking, oh, this is the American mindset. I can do this on my own. No, you can't. Because if you could have, you would have done it already. You need help. Get the help you need. If that's a personal trainer, if that's a psychologist, woman's group, man's group, if that's a book, if that's a course, if that's traveling to go to, like you go to Spain every year, like go to Spain and just go for a long walk, whatever you need, your healing needs you to give to it. You can't bypass it. You can't skip over it. It's dark. It's heavy. You got to face it. You got to come into conflict with those problems. Because I promise you, like, when you do, you get to the other side. And when you get to the other side, life is so much easier. It's so much easier when we're out of those, when we're out of our wounds, when we're out of victim mentality, when we're out of like, woe is me, when we're out of, well, this happened to me and this happened to me and this person, like, get out of that energy, that stuck energy. That's why those people always say like, oh, I feel stuck. Of course you're stuck. You're stuck in the past. You're stuck in a story. You're stuck in a wound. You know, so that's why I wrote the book, man. I wanted to, at the time I wrote the book, I myself was on that journey, you know, so I wrote the original one and then I was on that journey. But then now Hay House, they bought that book and they're like, hey, we want to make the font better. We want to do the cover again. We want to re-release it. We want you to do the audio book again. Like, are you, you know, like, let's redo it and make it a really official version. And so that's what we did. So yeah, that book is called Care Package, Harnessing the Power of Self-Compassion to Heal and Thrive.
That's book number 9, right? Mm-hmm. And then the 10th one you've submitted and is in process.
Yeah. The 10th one I turned in on my birthday. So this August, and they're still editing it right now. So hopefully I get it back soon to do like another edit, another round of editing. And that book will be coming out in August, whatever next year is, August next year. I'm at that point where the years just be blending for me.
Yeah. It's 2024.
2024. Got it.
Yeah. So I have to have you back in a year.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Let's
have you had that. Any feedback from anybody about the new one? Like, nope. You heard anything? None.
Nope. They're editing it. So they're just, they're,
how's
they're
it feel? Glad. Like, are you nervous? Are you excited? Are you just like ambivalent?
I'm indifferent. Yeah. I'm a stoic, man. I'm a stoic person. So I don't feel things that like don't exist, you know? So like right now, nothing exists. Like, they got the book, they're doing their work. I'll feel something when they give it back to me and they're like, hey, here's these 10,000 errors you need to fix. Like, I'll feel something that day, like, damn it, you know, but today I'm not even thinking about it. I feel like I wrote the best book of my life, turned it in. I feel like people are going to love it and get value out of it when they read it, you know, or at least that's how I felt when I turned it in. You know, whatever happens between now and when I get it back doesn't even matter.
Yeah. Well done, man. It's easy to say, difficult to implement, but I think it's the path.
Thank you, sir.
Anything we haven't discussed that you're feeling called to Sly Slam about?
You tell me.
I think we hit on the stuff I was looking to talk about. I mean, you're one of those dudes that I know I could just talk to you for days, man. It's like, what else is happening? We could just choose a topic and jam for an hour any given moment, I feel. But I had a question actually when I was brushing my teeth earlier. I was thinking about asking you, which is just simply like, what are you best at? Like, what do you think you're best at? Like, I know that you coach and you speak and you write books and you are on Instagram and you are a former professional athlete and you've changed your whole life and you're a dad and like you got many parts and pieces. And I was like, I wonder how he thinks about his best attributes.
I think I'm best at just finding a way.
Like figuring it out.
Yeah, just finding a way, man. Like, I think back, not in our generation, but generations ago, you could have, like, your job could be an explorer. Like, you literally would just explore the world, you know, and you go talk to people and you would draw up maps and you would write stories and, you know, you would taste different foods and you would bring certain things back to your tribe or your community. And you would just tell them like, hey, this is what I saw over there. Like, I saw this type of animal or whatever, you know. Essentially, all you're trying to do is just find a way. Like, you get like think about it. People have to find a way to get through the ocean. You know, like it's easy for us, but they didn't have these satellites we have and sonar and radar and, you know, these amazing boats. And they had to find a way. Like, people had to find a way to build a plane and all these like beautiful pieces of technology we have. You know, at the end of the day, like, if I lived in a different lifetime, I feel like I would just be an explorer. You know, if I had the same personality, like I would be one of those people that's like, all right, guys, I'm going on this mission for the next 45 days. I'm going to find out some things that's going to keep us alive and keep us going. I'll be back, you know, and I would just leave with like a bow and arrow and a knife and some like one pair of underwear or something, you know, like that would be me in another generation. Like I would be an explorer. So I think in this lifetime, like, I think I'm the same way, man. I'm just trying to find a way through.
Yeah. I just flashed to this story that you told about you and Brandon at the Spartan race, where you were like, hell no, man. Like, we're going over here. Where was it? Like,
yeah,
it's a freezing mud pit or something. And Brandon Collinsworth, our mutual friend, just dove in like, let's go. And then you're like, nah, B, like, get out. We're going this way.
So I tell that story. That was a good one. Cause some tough mudder, you're doing like 25 obstacles over like a seven mile, 10 kilometer area. And you know, we're in this thing for like an hour and 90 minutes at this point. Like we're moving, we're sweating, we're muddy, we're tired. And you get to this one where it's like a pyramid. Okay. But before you go in the pyramid, you have to go through this, like, it's like 4 feet of mud and water. And you submerge yourself in this water, and then you have to climb this pyramid. The pyramid was probably about 10 feet high. It was about as tall as a basketball rim, but it wasn't straight up. It was slanted at an angle. It was a, what type of triangle is this? Where they have the same size?
Isosceles.
Yeah, it was an isosceles triangle. So I'm just looking at this angle and I'm like, holy shit, this is not going to work. Because usually something that it's 10 feet in that angle, you need a rope or ladder, like you need something to hold on to. So I'm just sitting here and I'm just looking at the data, like, okay, as a scientist of human life, I'm like, we just walked in the mud pit, we're all drenched, there's nothing to hold on to, how are we going to climb up this thing? So I look and there's this big white dude, man. He's like 6'5". He looked like a Viking. He's got the beard. Like, he looks like the type that you would see like on the front lines of a war with an axe, like just chopping people, right? Like in some what was that show? Game of Thrones. Like, he looked like a Game of Thrones type of guy. So I'm looking at this dude and I'm like, all right, he is, you know, in corporate America, they say key point indicator, your KPIs. He was my KPI. All right. So I was like, let me see how he handles this. And because he's in front of me, this will let me know how I'm going to handle this. Okay. So he puts another man on his shoulders and he like squats at the bottom and he thrusts. He's like, ugh. And he's like pushing this man up. And he pushed this man up. And at the top, there was like another Viking man trying to grab the man that was in the middle. And so they're like, come on, brother. And they're like, you know, grabbing each other's forearms. And they're like grunting. And so he's like pulling the dude up. And it was like the movie where he had both hands, but then one slipped. And then they're just holding on to the one hand, like in the movies. And it was slow motion. And I was like, oh, shit, he's about to let go. So he lets go. And like, it was in slow motion for me. I see this huge man sliding 10 feet down this isosceles triangle that's completely drenched. He slams into the Viking's neck. The Viking turns like this. His neck is all messed up. He lets out this loud grunt. He's like, oh. And Brand is looking at me. He's like, yeah, let's go. Let's go. And I'm looking at this dude that just almost had his neck broke. And I look across. There's like five other people going through the same struggle. And so at first, my testosterone was going, my ego was going. I'm like, yeah, we're going to do this. You know, my peer pressure from my buddy was like, yeah, let's go. Then that logic kicked in and I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this. I'm not about to do this at all. I get out the pool. I'm like, Brandon, let's go, man. We're not doing this. And I just pointed at the dude with the neck. He's like holding his neck now. He's looking for a medic. I'm like, Brandon, look, come on, let's go. Brandon looked again and he was like, yeah. You right. Let's go, man. We out of here. So then we just went ahead like a nice conversation. And what do you know? At the very next checkpoint, they had some water for us. They had a banana. We went and met this guy and talked about like real estate. So we went from like potentially having like that neck breaking incident to getting a banana, getting some snacks and just finishing the walk, man. Great yeah. decision. Got to yeah. know when to abort.
Solid story. So many lessons in there. All right, brother. Well, this has been great. You're great. I just love you, man. You're such a character and such a like a glowing part of my life, man. And
appreciate you.
Yeah, it's been fun watching your journey unfold and being on the end of your Care Bear stairs sometimes, and the encouragement and the support that you offer, often unintentionally, just in the way you live, man. Like, I sometimes feel like I've got a little miniature Sly on my shoulder, like watching and just commentating. And yeah, man, I'm glad you're my friend. And to those listening, if you don't follow Sly, follow him on Instagram, read his books. Do you still have your podcast going?
Oh yeah, Free Your Energy Podcast. Also, I'll say this too, man. I got a new course out that people will love. It's called People Pleasing 101, a step-by-step guide to stop people pleasing. And in that course, it literally just went on sale. It'll be on sale for the next 3 weeks. So definitely sign up for it. It's going to teach you how to stop people pleasing, man. I'm tired of seeing people pleasing. They're feeling drained, feeling used, feeling abused with the lack of boundaries, the guilt, the not having your voice, the not knowing how to speak for yourself. Come into that course. I'm going to teach you everything.
It's a live Q&A kind of thing on Zoom, or?
Oh no, it's a course that once you buy it, you got all the files. Oh, gotcha. Videos. Yeah, yeah.
Sweet, man. Is it one of those where you just got tired of seeing it happening again and again?
Yeah.
Answering questions.
I'm just tired of it.
You're like,
no, I'm just tired of it, man. I just hate the life that people have when they are committed to being a people pleaser. It's like, it's so draining. And I'm a person, like, I love to please people. I love to give. I love to share. I love to help, you know? So I know the feeling that we can get from giving with boundaries, man. Giving, making sure, like, if you got $100, how the hell are you giving people 140? You know, like, and that's what people pleasers are doing. They're over giving, they're oversharing, they're just giving too much. And so I kind of just reached a point where I was like, you know what? I need a solution. You know, I need a solution for people who are like, hey, how do I, you know, now read my DMs. They're like, well, how do I start? I'm like, okay, this is people pleasing. It's like every single day, the problems that I'm seeing, I'm like, this is people pleasing. It's like, you don't have boundaries. You don't have your voice. You don't know your wants and your needs. You don't recognize. And it's some of the times we're people pleasing and it's like a naive thing. Like, we don't even really realize we're doing it because we were taught in our subconsciousness to do it from the time we were kids, you know? So that was, yeah, that's why I had to create that, man. I want people to stop it. I want people to stop.
It's like, you're starving. Stop giving your food away. Like, what are you doing?
It's like, oh, well, they're going to love me more if I give them my last meal. No, they're not. No. And then, like, here's the other thing too, is like, people pleasers often feel like if I don't help or save this person, like this person is going to die. No, they're not. You know what? And I believe that some people need to suffer. It's okay to suffer. You find truth in suffering. You find a way out in suffering. You find resources in your suffering. If every single time you suffer, I'm like, oh, I got you. Don't suffer. Don't suffer. Let me save you. You don't build any resilience. You don't build any conflict resolution. You don't figure out how to do things for yourself. And what I'm doing is I'm, like you say, I'm giving my last money to you, or I'm giving my last food to you. And now I'm broke. And now I'm starving. Because I'm going to be a people pleaser. No, that's foolishness. Yeah. And we need to stop it.
Yeah. It's like, if you keep saving people from drowning, they're not going to learn how to swim, right? It's like, they're a grown-ass man, grown-ass woman. Like, let them figure it out.
Figure it out. You got to figure it out.
Cool. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes. If you're listening, check out People Pleasing 101. Is that what it's called?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Any final words of wisdom?
Drink some water. That's it.
Hydrate. And what was the other? Hygiene.
The two H's, hygiene and hydrate, baby. Every morning.
You're the best, bro.
So there you go. That is Sylvester McNutt III. As mentioned, he has got a new People Pleasing 101 online course that you can buy and take and improve yourself and your relationships. I've included a link to that in the show notes, as well as his Instagram, the website, the podcast, etc. Thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. If you have any recommendations for guests, I would love to hear them. If you know anybody that needs to listen to this conversation, please do share it. Send it their way. Tag them on Instagram. Mail a letter to your mailman. Help spread the word. Every little bit does help. to enhance the compassionate collective that we are attempting to create. The ripples matter, and you matter. Let's keep making kindness cool and compassion commonplace. I appreciate you, and I will talk to you soon.